the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Freeze, watch, good afternoon, welcome to the broadcast. It may be May, but we've got some uncommon cold on the way. The National Weather Service's temperatures will dip to below freezing tonight, and that could kill crops and other tender vegetation. We'll talk more about it with Kevin coming up. In just over 2 weeks, Uncle Sam runs out of money. The federal government may not be able to pay its bills. A fiscal cliff is forthcoming if Congress and the White House can't seal a deal on the debt ceiling.
We're just getting started.
With the clock ticking towards potential catastrophe, no deal yet between President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy over the nation's debt limit. But Tuesday's White House meeting between the president and congressional leaders may have broken new ground.
It is possible to get a deal by the end of the week. It's not that difficult to get to an agreement.
For the first time, Democratic leaders are conceding a bipartisan compromise will be needed to break the impasse, likely combining an increase in the nation's borrowing limit with spending cuts.
Correspondent Garrett Hake, a judge has blocked New York City from sending any more migrants upstate to Orange County. The 200 already there can stay, but the city wants to send seven more busloads to a hotel in Newburgh. Mayor Eric Adams says there's just no more room in the Big Apple.
None of us are comfortable with having to take these drastic steps.
The mayor has turned 20 school gymnasiums into migrant shelters. That's led to mass protests by parents. Nate Foy reports from outside a public school in Brooklyn.
Many parents are holding a no-show protest, holding their kids home from school until this policy is reversed.
The prospects of unvetted adult men on school grounds while school's in session is not sitting well with Rosie Velez, who has a child enrolled at one of those school/migrant shelters.
Our main concern is the safety of our children. This is now no place to bring them in. It's very dangerous for them and also for our children.
Locally, two hotels in Broome County have turned down a request to house 40 migrants for a period of up to a year there in the Binghamton area. Britain's Prince Harry and wife Meghan Markle were chased by the paparazzi last night in New York City for over 2 hours. That pursuit resulted in multiple near collisions involving other drivers, pedestrians, and even a couple of cop cruisers. Harry's mother, of course, the late Lady Di, was killed in a car crash after being chased by the paparazzi 26 years ago in Paris. Mum's the word from the White House on the findings in the Durham report, the 4-year special counsel probe into the FBI's handling of the Trump-Russia collusion hoax. Former Attorney General Bill Barr.
Hillary Clinton's campaign launched a smear campaign that was based on getting Russian sources to spread false information about Donald Trump and peddle it to the press and to the government, the FBI.
Conservative podcaster Jake Beckett.
This is way worse than Watergate ever was. Okay, this is Watergate on steroids, and if they're not going to face consequences, it's just going to get even worse.
Beckett says the CIA and FBI, as well as members of the mainstream media, need to be under the microscope for promoting baseless claims about the former president in 2016. North Carolina Republicans have successfully blocked their governor's attempts to squash a pro-life law which bans abortions after 12 weeks. Here's House Speaker Tim Moore.
The House has overridden the governor's veto and the bill becomes law. So be notified.
That law takes effect the 1st of July. A hearing is happening today before the Fifth Circuit in New Orleans on the status of the abortion kill pill, mifepristone. A 3-judge panel deciding its legal status. Mifepristone is used to terminate more than half of all pregnancies in this country. The Biden administration proposing a rule change for Title IX, which would dramatically alter women's sports.
The integrity of women's sports will be completely lost if this is something that goes through. I can't even put into words the damage this will do.
Former NCAA swimmer Riley Gaines testifying on Capitol Hill today in support of the Women's Bill of Rights.
The Women's Bill of Rights is a bill that defines the word woman. It blows my mind we even have to have this as a law.
The White House wants to ban states from banning biological males from competing against girls in women's sports. President Biden honored 9 public safety officers today with the Medal of Valor. 2 New York police officers who were killed in an ambush and the cop who killed the gunman were among the recipients. Also honored 3 New York City firemen who risked their lives to save others. The number of Americans diagnosed with depression is at a new all-time high.
New numbers show 29% of Americans have been diagnosed with depression at some point in their lives. That's up nearly 10 points from 2015, the first year that Gallup conducted a poll on the issue. The percentage of Americans who are currently being treated for depression is nearly 18%. The survey found that depression numbers had been steadily rising, but jumped significantly after the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Rory O'Neill.
Still to come on the Noon Report, election results from New York and Pennsylvania, a conversation with a local congressman, and the teenage basketball phenom from France.
Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Williams, tracking some unusually cool air that'll set the stage for a frosty night tonight in many parts of our region. I'll have the numbers in the forecast coming up in 10.
All right, Kevin, news where you live next. Dems keep the House in Harrisburg. The results are in from Tuesday's special elections in Pennsylvania, and Democrats maintain their one-seat majority in the House.
Voters in suburban Philadelphia have ensured that Democrats keep state House control. Democrat Heather Boyd won the special election in Delaware County after her Democratic predecessor resigned amid sexual harassment allegations.
Boyd's win ensures the Democrats will have the political leverage they need to advance Governor Shapiro's agenda. The state Senate will stay in Republican control. There were elections on Tuesday in Pennsylvania on everything from judgeships to school boards to county commissioners. Erie County Clerk Julie Slomski.
These local elections are just as important as the larger elections. These are the elections that truly matter.
The candidates nominated in yesterday's primaries now move on to the general election in November. Tuesday was also school budget day in New York, and the vast majority of school budgets passed.
I voted yes for the budget. 0% tax increase for me, so.
I voted yes. I just think the kids are important.
We should invest more into what we need to keep them safe and what we need to keep them learning.
Only a handful of districts said no to their local spending plans. Cortland and Addison in the southern tier among them. Voters also elected school board members. In Orchard Park, the vote was contentious, and a lot of it had to do with issues like transgender rights and sexually explicit books in school. Stephen Barlett came out on the losing end last night.
And it's not really a good feeling when you don't feel represented or your family doesn't feel represented and you feel ignored and cast off to the side.
6 candidates were vying for 3 school board seats there in Orchard Park. Several local colleges are reaching out to help students at Madai University in Buffalo after it announced it was closing. Damon University, Canisius College, and Alfred University among those who've offered to accept Madai students to help them finish their academic careers. Madai is shutting down August 31st due to financial reasons.
We do not have as many college-age students as we did in the past.
That is Erie County Executive Mark Poloncarz.
It would not surprise me to see additional closures in the next few years across the country, but hopefully not here. If it did happen, it wouldn't shock me.
When it comes to college affordability, no state has a worse track record than Pennsylvania. U.S. News & World Report ranks the Commonwealth last in the nation. The report claims Pennsylvania has too many schools that cost too much, leaving too many students with crushing levels of college debt. Pennsylvania Congressman Glenn Thompson is confident a debt ceiling deal will get done before the 1st of June.
It is the legal, moral, and ethical thing to pay our debts, no matter how abusive that spending was. But at the same time, you have to put in a pathway for fiscal responsibility.
And when it comes to the Durham report, the Republican representative hopes heads will roll, so to speak, for how the FBI handled the Trump-Russia collusion narrative.
This was a product of Donald J. Trump's political opponents. And to allow that type of politicization within an agency that we've always looked to under the name of justice, that probably is one of the scariest situations that the United States can face.
And on the border disorder, the congressman says the flood of refugees coming into America is solely the fault of the White House.
This is a crisis, a human crisis, that they created, and quite frankly, they continue to facilitate.
Thompson fears the invasion invasion of illegal immigrants will overwhelm local governments, several local counties now declaring states of emergency. The families of the Buffalo top shooting victims are suing social media, saying sites like TikTok and YouTube enabled the gunman's racist views. Here's attorney Elena Garcia.
Just like if there was a faulty airbag or a faulty medication where the factory had no product controls and you became sick, social media is making people sick.
The shooter live streamed the attack last year on a social media site that was seen by more than 3 million Americans. Workers are on strike at a nursing home in Williamsville, New York today, just outside Buffalo. 30 employees at the Comprehensive Rehabilitation and Nursing Center demanding better pay and hours. They do plan to return to work tomorrow. A majority of Pennsylvania's rural hospitals do not deliver babies. In fact, 60% of the state's 42 rural hospitals lack labor and delivery units. That means pregnant women in those communities need to drive almost 40 minutes on average to reach a hospital in case of an emergency. Well, it's the season for the sneezing, as they say. A lot of pollen in the air out there. One local allergy specialist believes this allergy season will be one of the longest and the most robust in recent memory.
Every year I wind up getting a comment, is this the worst season ever? And previously I would respond to that by saying, well, you just don't remember what last year was like, and it may not be as bad as you think it is. Not this year. It's as bad as they think it is, and perhaps even worse.
That's Dr. Stanley Schwartz, and he says allergy season began early this year in mid-March and could last until the first hard freeze, which typically does not happen until November. Police officers throughout Pennsylvania are taking part in a torch run to kick off the Special Olympics next month. Started in Pittsburgh and will end at Penn State, where this year's Special Olympics will be held. The run spans 150 miles. And will culminate with the lighting of the cauldron during the opening ceremonies in June. The top two golfers in the world will be teeing off tomorrow for the start of the PGA Championship at the Oak Hill Country Club in Rochester, New York. They are John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler, and both say that course ain't easy.
Tough course. You know, it's whoever is setting up the golf course can have a lot of fun. We played yesterday, and I hit the fairway on four, and I had hit like a 50-yard hook around the trees to get to the green. That was kind of a telltale sign.
A lot of Rochester getting ready for the golf. Should be a good one. The PGA Championship returning to the Flower City for the first time in over a decade. You're listening to the Noon Report on Family Life. Your midweek midday sports is next. NBA teams had their fingers crossed last night at the draft lottery.
The number one pick in the 2023 NBA draft goes to the San Antonio Spurs.
The Spurs' number one overall pick will be none other than a 7'5" teenage phenom from France. 19-year-old Victor Wembanyama said to be the biggest thing to hit the NBA since LeBron James. The draft will happen June 22nd at Madison Square Garden. On the hardwood last night, the Denver Nuggets drew first blood in the Western Conference Finals against LeBron James and his LA Lakers. Nikola Jokic scoring 34 points, grabbed 21 rebounds, dished out 14 assists in that victory. The Eastern Conference Finals tip off tonight with the Boston Celtics hosting the Miami Heat. The puck drops tomorrow night in the Stanley Cup playoffs, the Eastern Conference Finals. Florida is in Raleigh to take on the Hurricanes. Out west, the Vegas Golden Knights will host the Dallas Stars on Friday. On the diamond, Yankees pitcher Domingo Germán ejected for the second time this season for having too much sticky stuff. He threw three scoreless innings before getting the old heave-ho from the umps. Manager Aaron Boone.
Yeah. They felt it was too sticky, and they ran it.
Nonetheless, the Yankees hang on to beat the Blue Jays 6-3. Aaron Judge belting another home run in that one. The Mets lose again, falling to Tampa in interleague play, 8-5. Your final, Justin Verlander got roughed up in his debut at Citi Field, allowing 6 runs on 8 hits through 5 innings. The 40-year-old said afterward,
"We expect to be better. I expect to be better. I think this entire organization expects to be better. And there's only one thing left to do, and that's, you know, put your head down, work hard, and and find your way out of this slump.
Both the Phillies and Pirates lose as well. At the Family Life Sports Desk, I'm Bob Price. Still to come on the Noon Report, new abortion ban in North Carolina, new hope in the fight over the debt ceiling, and new concerns at the overrun southern border.
Welcome to Breakpoint, a daily look at an ever-changing culture through the lens of unchanging truth. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. In his documentary, An Inconvenient Truth, former U.S. Vice President Al Gore famously showed an image that became an icon of global warming. The so-called hockey stick graph, which plotted global temperatures over the centuries, reportedly showed that a spike occurred after human beings began using fossil fuels. For Gore and his fellow climate activists, this hockey stick was the smoking gun that something unprecedented was happening to the planet, except it's been widely disputed as containing serious flaws. Well, today, a different type of hockey stick, a different graph using data from the U.S. Census Bureau's Household Pulse Survey, shows a huge, sudden, and startling spike in the number of girls and women identifying as transgender. Since such records have been kept, the percentage of adults who identified as transgender within a population remained consistently low until just recently. And for baby boomers and Gen Xers, those who identified as transgender were overwhelmingly men identifying as women. However, something's changed. The rate of Gen Z women identifying as men has skyrocketed to about twice that of Gen Z men identifying as women. It's roughly quadruple the rate of millennial women who identified as male. In fact, almost 1 in 30 Gen Z women now identify as men, and a further 1 in 25 identify as non-binary. To paraphrase Christian author Samuel James on Twitter, the trans revolution has, in just the last few years, become a girls' revolution. The unprecedented spike in girls who don't want to be girls anymore is what caught the attention of Lisa Littman, then assistant professor at Brown University, when she coined the term rapid onset gender dysphoria. She was seeking to explain why clusters of girls, often in schools and peer groups, suddenly had decided together that they were all trans. Based on her research, Littman theorized that this flood of gender confusion was in fact a so-called social contagion spread by influence and example rather than because of some innate trait that they all shared. This maladaptive coping mechanism, as she put it, may be a response to the stress of life and adolescence, perhaps even more a form of self-harm like cutting. The outbreak of gender confusion among Gen Z young women runs counter to the prevailing assertion of the LGBTQ movement that no one becomes trans. They're instead really born this way. It's an innate thing. That common explanation that most such individuals were therefore closeted in the past and are now finally able to be who they always were just doesn't make sense of the data that we're now seeing. In particular, it's the startling hockey stick of young women suddenly announcing they're not women. That's making the explanation difficult to believe, especially when it's placed alongside the similarly dramatic graph that portrays the crumbling mental health among Gen Z women. These facts must force experts and activists to reckon with the widespread harm that's being done to young women right now. And we all must, as individuals, as families, and as a society, reckon with why so many girls no longer want to be girls. Especially the social media, the television, the movies, the magazines, the apps, and the pornography that form the bulk of Gen Z's information diet. Is it any wonder so many girls think that the best way to not be sexualized is to not be female at all? This generation of young women needs to see, whether through the hockey stick graph or through some other tool, that the prevailing so-called wisdom about who they are is really just dangerous nonsense. Even more, they'll need a better vision, one big enough to ground the inherent dignity shared by all human beings, male and female. And in all of human history, it's only been the vision of the Imago Dei that's been able to pull that off. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint. Today's Breakpoint was co-authored by Shane Morris. For more resources to live like a Christian in this cultural moment, go to breakpoint.org.
Maybe it's cold outside, Kevin Williams.
Here is your Family Life weather forecast. An unusually cool air mass is in play now, but high pressure will deliver sun and a warm-up as we progress through the rest of the week. The call for this afternoon, bright and sunny with cool air in place. Very cool. High temperatures in the 50s and clear and downright cold tonight. Widespread frost will form again away from cities and lakeshores. Low temperatures mostly 30s. Tomorrow, sunny, high temps breaking 60. Friday is partly sunny with high temperatures breaking 70.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. Lots going on Wednesday, the 17th of May. President Biden will be shortening his trip to the G7 in Japan this week so he can attend to debt ceiling talks in Washington. He huddled with congressional leaders yesterday to try and avert a fiscal catastrophe.
There was an overwhelming consensus, I think, that defaulting on the debt is simply not an option.
The president leaving for Japan right now. He's canceled the trip, however, to Australia due to the ongoing debt ceiling talks. The results are in from Pennsylvania's primary elections. The big news out of Harrisburg, Democrats maintain their one-seat advantage in the House. That's thanks to a special election in the Philly suburbs, a heavily Democratic district there. First-time voter Spencer Landon explains why local elections matter so much.
They're the ones that are creating the rules and making the decisions for what impact us and our local communities rather than just the country as a whole.
New York voters also casting ballots Tuesday for school boards and school budgets. The vast majority of spending plans were adopted locally, however, two were not. Both Addison and Cortland voters said no to their school budgets. President Biden claims the border is getting better after a record number of illegal immigrants entered this country last week. Six people on the FBI's terror watch list were arrested in just the past couple of days, bringing to nearly 90 the total number this year. 30 Chinese nationals were picked up this week walking along the side of a road in South Texas. They had come across the border from Mexico. Meantime, New York City parents are protesting a decision by the mayor to convert 20 school gymnasiums into migrant shelters. Nate Foy is at one of those schools.
It's a basketball court just filled with cots and supplies where the migrants will be staying. We know they'll be arriving here this week, but it's unclear exactly how long the migrants will be staying here.
Meantime, a judge has blocked New York City from sending any more migrants upstate to Orange County. The 200 already there can stay, but the city wants to send about seven more busloads to a hotel in Newburgh. Two hotels in Binghamton also rejecting a request to house about 40 migrants for about 6 months to a year. California has a budget deficit of more than $30 billion, but that is not stopping the Golden State from proposing weekly $300 unemployment checks for illegal immigrants.
This is the reason that folks, 200 plus thousand a year, are leaving California. It's because of this.
Mike Diaz is a California resident who came to this country legally more than 20 years ago.
After COVID, when we paid people not to work, and it's exactly what they did, not work. What do we think is going to happen with giving this money to illegal immigrants that are unemployed? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
If approved, those checks would go to people in California in this country unlawfully for up to 20 weeks. They'll get those checks if approved. California has also proposed slave reparations that would cost the state $800 billion. North Carolina Republicans have voted to override their governor and his veto of a new pro-life law, Governor Roy Cooper. That means the 12-week abortion ban will stand in the Tar Heel State.
The people of the state are just family values conservative people.
Reporter Caitlin Huey Burns has more.
Last month, a Democratic state representative from the liberal-leaning Charlotte area switched parties just 5 months after elections. The change gave Republicans a supermajority and the power to override vetoes from Governor Cooper.
The 12-week abortion ban takes effect the 1st of July. There's a new warning today about soft contact lenses.
A study by the EPA finds 18 different types contain extremely high levels of organic fluorine. That's a marker of chemicals linked to cancer, fetal complications, liver, kidney, and thyroid disease.
Correspondent Deborah Rodriguez, electric vehicle owners are getting their own highway in the state of Michigan. Governor Gretchen Whitmer.
It will allow seamless international travel between Michigan and Canada, accidental or otherwise, with abundant charging options throughout your journey.
How about that? The EV-only highway runs almost 900 miles from Kalamazoo to Quebec City. Next at noon, Family Life's Martha Menikas Foster is taking a deep dive into what it means to grow in Christ. What is spiritual growth anyhow? She's speaking with Savannah Kimberlin at the Barna Group, and here's some of their conversation.
An overwhelming percentage of Americans say they want to grow spiritually, but what does that mean? And how can people who love Jesus connect our spiritually hungry neighbors with the great good news of God? Well, we're going to talk about that here today on Family Life's Inside Out. I'm Martha Menikas Foster, and my guest is Savannah Kimberlin. She's Associate Vice President of Church Engagement with the Barna Group. Savannah, Barna's research reports that well over 70% of Americans across the board, we're talking boomers, Gen X, millennials, Gen Z, over 70% say they would like to grow spiritually. And Christians probably interpret that a certain way. What does growing spiritually mean to the people responding in this study?
We need to keep in mind as Christians today, listening to this data, that when over 7 in 10 people say they want to grow spiritually, they are not necessarily saying, hey, I want to meet Jesus. Hey, I want to become a Christian. Mm-hmm. They are more so considering spirituality through the lens of, I want my life to be more full. I want to find purpose. I want to find inner peace. And I'm pretty sure that there's a supernatural dimension to the world around us. And so perhaps the way that I can find inner peace is by looking towards that supernatural dimension that seems foggy, it seems far away. I'm not entirely sure what it is or where it is, but there's more to life and I want to lean into that.
Now, Savannah, as Christians, we believe we know the answer to spiritual hunger. We have that answer. Does this research, or maybe previous Barna research, give a sense of practical ways that Christians might share Jesus with the spiritually hungry around us? And might this be different from how Christians have shared the love of Jesus and his love for us in the past?
Yes, the way that we need to share the love of Jesus today is very different than how he has been shared in the past, because culture today is different than what it has been in the past. So, number one, we know that many people today, especially those who would self-identify as spiritually open, but they're not a Christian, they care very deeply about knowing and seeing and being taught that Christianity, the teachings of Jesus, the Bible, etc., Christianity is not only true, but that it is also good. Whereas evangelism tactics of the past have leaned very heavily into the truth of Scripture, and I'm not saying neglect that by any means, the truth of our religion, but what does it look like to pair that concept of truth with the concept of goodness, to show people that Christianity is just and it is loving and it is kind and it teaches us to care for those who are marginalized, that Christianity promotes peace in our lives and in our communities. Secondly, I would say it is important to listen. And we're using the phrase gradual evangelism, gradual relational evangelism even, as a way to describe modern day evangelism tactics. We are talking about a group of people who want to be given the gift of time to process their doubts, to process what they believe in a safe relationship, to have someone that will listen to their stories before offering up stories of their own. And so go slow and be willing to be patient.
So if we're growing ourselves in our closeness with Jesus, with God, with the Trinity, the hope, the prayer is that it is going to show, and then the questions come and the conversation builds and we're sharing our lives, which are seasoned by Christ. Yes?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes, absolutely. And we know that in our data, it shows clearly the most appealing quality in a Christian friend is that their actions speak louder than words. If your life does not line up with what comes out of your mouth, you are automatically disqualifying yourself from an evangelism relationship. Now, I will say, just as a caveat, we're not expecting perfection.
Yeah, not what we're asking for.
But we're looking for authenticity. We're looking for repentance. when needed, right? And right. and we're looking for humility. And so if we want to step into these kinds of relationships where we are being salt and light and where we are facilitating spiritual conversations, we have to make sure that our actions speak louder than our words.
All right, that'll preach any day of the week. Savannah Kimberlin with the Barner Group speaking to our own Martha Menikis Foster on this week's Inside Out. You can download Martha's entire conversation by going to familylife.org. Just look for the news icon on the podcast page.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast and unusually cool air masses in play now. With a little feel of fall out there this afternoon, and that feel will increase tonight as temperatures drop toward the freeze point. Frost is going to be a factor for many of us overnight tonight, with areas away from the cities and lakeshores looking to be very susceptible. But high pressure will deliver sun and a warm-up as we progress through the rest of the week. The call for this afternoon, bright and sunny with cool air in place, very cool, high temperatures in the 50s, and clear and downright cold tonight. Widespread frost will form again away from cities and lakeshores. Low temperatures, mostly 30s. Tomorrow, sunny, high temps breaking 60. Friday is partly sunny with high temperatures breaking 70.
All right, we'll take it. Thank you, Kevin. And finally at noon today, mosquito season is in full bloom, folks. And if those little bugs like to bite you, it may be entirely your own fault. Listen to this from Bree Tennis.
There are 3,500 species of mosquitoes around the world. There's no mistake if one's flying near you. It's a distinctive buzz, but it's only the girl mosquitoes who do the biting. And if they're after you, there's hope. A new study by researchers at Virginia Polytechnic Institute say if mosquitoes are biting you, it's because you're too clean. The research says mosquitoes are attracted to the smell of some soaps as well as the smell of no fragrance at all. Scientists say if you're trying to repel mosquitoes by smell, try coconut oil. Mosquitoes don't like that smell at all. I'm Bree Tennis, NBC News Radio.
All right, news you can use. Looks like I'm buying some coconut oil this afternoon. Thank you, Bree. That's our world for Wednesday, the 17th of May. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.